stars live here.
Are you ready?
On air. Online.
You ready to have a good time?
On your smart speaker and wherever you stream. Broadcasting from Montreal and around the world.
The Jeremy White Show, available wherever you stream.
Catch up on past interviews and episodes on demand now.
Subscribe so you don't miss any of it.
Our next guest has got a brand new EP coming out called Four on the Floor. It's available December 8th. You can pre-order it now, and it's going to be available on all the streaming platforms wherever you get your music. Bearclaws Academy of Music.com if you want to go check it out. We're going to be joined by Living Color vocalist Corey Glover in just a moment. When he gets here, please welcome to the show for the first time, the one, the only, Mr. Is it Bearclaw? Do you prefer Bearclaw? Like, what do you prefer?
You know, Bearclaw is my nickname, so we can go by that. I mean, Joe Bearclaw, whatever.
Okay. Joe, what's going on?
Not much, Jeremy. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Big fan, so it's a pleasure being here.
Well, I appreciate that. You reached out to my producer with this really cool project, and I thought it was super interesting. So I mean, let's talk about this. So sure. Brand new EP coming out, Four on the Floor. You got Living Color vocalist Corey Glover on the first single. So much fun. Talk a little bit about how this project came about and why do this?
Well, first off, Corey and I, we both have somebody in common, which is Doug Wimbish. Doug Wimbish is the bass player from Living Color. Mm. And Doug is my neighbor.
And oh, no way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You literally live side by side?
He's 10 minutes away, but I always say he's my neighbor.
Yeah, so he's your neighbor.
I can still walk to his house.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so we were doing some writing on our own, and we have a couple tunes in the can that we still have to finish up, and we thought that it would be nice to get Corey involved. So Corey was doing some guest vocalization for us and dropping in some things here and there for the instrumentals that we wrote. And then COVID happened, and then the world shut down. I had a baby, and so we had to put things on hold for a little while, and we're going to get back to that. But during the pandemic, you know, everybody's at home, don't have a lot to do because we can't go to work. And I thought to myself, you know, I really want to do something and give back, because there's so much distress in the world. And, you know, you're looking at what was going on with George Floyd and just the uptick in spousal abuse and domestic abuse, and wanted to talk to my musician friends and see if we could try to write some tunes together and kind of get this off of our chest. So I called Corey, and he was around and totally into it. And we have a mutual friend, Jamie McDonald, and the three of us were just Zooming and having sessions virtually from our homes. We weren't even together.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, this proves too to myself that you can actually make a pretty decent sounding EP or release that wasn't even done in the traditional way in a regular studio, because we all have our own DAW systems and just recorded virtually that way. So,
but that's the beautiful thing about technology, right? Like you know, like even 10 years ago, you wouldn't have thought I'd been able to do this, but I think COVID kind of changed that for a lot of people. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. We can actually make a full record and make it sound like it's recorded at Abbey Road or Sunset Studios. Like,
I know, it's amazing. And all these plugins that you can pull in to make it just, you know, boost up the EQ and
yeah,
all that good stuff.
You have a full SSL you're right. console in your bedroom, but like in plugin.
Yeah. Yeah. I taught myself virtually how to do Logic. So I was kind of flying by the seat of my pants, but you know, once you do it a couple times, you kind of get the hang of it. So yeah, I was quite pleased with the end result. So yeah, I'll definitely do that again at some point.
Talk a little bit about the sound of the project. I mean, like Corey, I mean, obviously Living Color, one of the best rock bands to come out of the late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the sound of the record. Like, what can fans expect? Genre wise, is going to be like a cross genre thing? We got some rock, we got some dance, we got some, like, what's the plan?
Well, the underlying theme, and that's why it's called Four on the Floor, is that every song is 110 BPMs or more. So yeah, it kind of has that dancey R&B groove.
Well, you got the Sylvester cover on there, so I was like, okay, it's going to be like a disco-y, like fun dance record.
Right. Yeah, that was a hoot doing that. Well, what, talking about that song in particular, I really wanted people, when they do listen to it, to wonder who the vocalist is. So that's why I had asked Corey, let's do falsetto, because he has a great falsetto and he always keeps his pitch. I mean, he does it in his normal range as well. But when you listen to it and listen to him in falsetto, you don't go, hey, wait, that's Corey Glover. You have to think twice about who the vocalist is. So that was something that I intended for us to pursue with that. So yeah, it was, you know, as I said, everything has a dance theme to it, but there are topical conversations that are being had underneath with the lyrical content. So you take, for instance, the song Zigzag, and that is about having the conversation on racism. And for people in particular, in the United States in particular, to wake up and to be aware that this conversation needs to be had, because this has been going on for way too long. And as we can see in the news, things haven't really changed in over the decades.
No, not really. I don't think they ever will, really.
Yeah, no, it's, you could be right. You could be
Everybody's
right.
Always,
I don't know what the solution is, but.
Look, man, I'm a Native American. I live on a reservation just off the Montreal Island, like born and raised Mohawk from Ganawage. And like, I've dealt with the racism my whole life. I mean, like playing in minor hockey to having the French guys on the other team, you know, on the other bench yelling at us savages and this and that. And, you know, even just like the all the cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women across the country to residential schools. And like, there's so much terrible history about Native Americans in this country. It's kind of similar to like, you know, what's happened to the Black people, like in the US. Like it gets better, but does it?
Yeah, I know. It's just so much oppression. There really is.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, we're humans. I just wish people could just look beyond color and just see that we are human beings.
Yeah.
You know, flesh and blood, we're all the same. But unfortunately, that's just not how it goes.
And it's ironic how Corey's in a band called, you know, Living Color.
Living Color, yeah. Yep. Very ironic, isn't it?
So this EP is going to be coming out, Four on the Floor, available December 8th. You go to BearclawAcademyMusic.com. Talk a little bit about your Academy of Music. So when did you decide to become a music teacher?
Well, I was in a band called Black 47 for almost a decade and out of New York City, a Celtic rock band. And we were touring nonstop. And in late 2014, the band retired officially.
Wow.
And I had to think about, because this was, you know, I was making my living through that.
Yeah. Was it a good living? Was touring good to you?
It was pretty good. It was, you know, I got by, you know, it's not like I was making $100,000, but I was making enough to, you know, pay my bills and have some money for food.
Better than going to the office.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah. I didn't have to do the 9-to-5. but also, you know, getting back on Black 47, you know, I was a fan of the band. So when I was at college, I used to see these guys perform. So here you go, 10 years later from when I first saw them live, I had to pinch myself that I'm standing on stage with these guys who I loved and admired.
It's a little weird, right?
Yeah, it was a little weird. It took me a little while to get over that. But to get back on the band retiring, I had to think about what am I going to do? And I just, you know, I saw a lot of my friends who were older, who were struggling, didn't have a 401k. And, you know, they were going from gig to gig. And it's, you know, there's a lot of hills and valleys being a musician. And I wanted some stability.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? I think this is the time for me to open up a music school and see what happens. And here we are almost 8 years later and we're going strong. And I'm really, really proud of what we've been able to do in building this thing from the ground up.
Right.
So that's, you know, I'm a part-time musician. That's what I like to consider myself, because I have to run the school. So I've got all these people that I have to coordinate and do all the scheduling and all that good stuff.
How many people you got working there? Is it just you or is it like a whole crew?
No, it's me. I have about 14 people that work. So
I can, you know, bring my kid there, get like piano lessons, guitar lessons, like teach me how to sing, stuff like that. It's a proper like academy.
It is. Yeah. We offer every instruction on all woodwinds and brass and piano and guitar and vocals. Yeah. We have it all. Also, my wife, who is a music therapist, and she deals with children who have special needs and autism. Mm. And we also are adamant about offering that type of service as well. So if anybody has children or adults with autism, we offer classes at our place for that. During the summer is when we usually do that for the group.
Yeah. So is it mostly like an after school kind of thing? Like kids will go there and like, you know, do their guitar lessons and stuff, or is it like an all day thing? Like you offer like camps? Like what's
Yeah, right. We don't, you know, a friend of mine told me before I got into this game, don't do retail just because of everybody going online now to get their yeah. product. So I do rentals of instruments, but as far as anything else, retail, no, I don't offer that. Yeah. But we what was the question again? I'm sorry.
I was gonna say, like, so is it like an after school kind of thing?
Oh, after
like,
right. Yeah. So yeah, it's from 2 p.m. on because most of the kids get out around 2.
Yeah.
So we go from 2 till around 8:30 or 9 p.m.
Nice.
And yeah, we work on the weekends and Saturdays too, because a lot of people come out on Saturdays.
What are some of the difficulties? I mean, having to run a music school, like what if the kid's just not good? Are you allowed to tell them? Are you allowed to be brutally honest with parents? Like, listen, I'm sorry, little Johnny just does not have it.
You know, I have never had to be in that position to actually say that. Uh-huh. So I can't speak from experience, but I do know as an empath that if I had a kid that was struggling, I might maybe have a conversation with the parent that, you know, maybe either they need to focus a little more on practicing, because a lot of these kids, Jeremy, they don't practice.
No, of course not.
They'll have their lesson and maybe they'll put in 5 minutes during the week up to the next lesson. So it's, you know, it's a different generation as far as kids being able to focus a lot.
Yeah. So, yeah. Every kid just wants to pick up the guitar. I was going to say every kid wants to pick up the guitar and just play Eruption right away. Like nobody wants to put the work in.
I know. They go to YouTube to get all the instruction. It's not always great. You know, some of the people on there aren't always accurate with what they're showing either.
Yeah. So what are you teaching them? Are you teaching them to read, like read and write, or is it like tabs? Like, are they just jamming? Like, what's like, if I come in for like a first lesson, what are you going to teach me?
Yeah. Well, for me, I mean, I teach ukulele, guitar, and bass, but bass is my primary. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to feel out the student and see where they're at, because I have all these different method books from when I was in college that I still use, Mel Bay books. For reading notation, because I feel like it's so vitally important for people to be able to read music. I really do. I think it opens up the right hemisphere of your brain. It's another language, and I really think it helps you to become smarter. I really do feel that.
Yeah.
So I really encourage students to read and to go over their scales. I mean, we're not going to get into modes and get really deep unless I have a student that really wants that, but I haven't really had many for that. But you know, we have regionals around our area where kids they audition to get into this special band that goes throughout the state and plays, but you have to audition for it. Mm-hmm. So I've helped a couple kids with that and you know, passing their auditions, and I've been successful with that.
Nice.
So yeah, you know, sight reading is important. I really feel adamant about that.
I remember when I was like first getting into music, like I wanted to play guitar, and then I read somewhere that Eddie Van Halen like started out on the piano and then he switched over to the guitar. And so I tried to do that. And I took a couple of lessons, but man, sitting there reading, like trying to read the music, like I would get so bored. So what I would do is I would learn it and then just perform it back from like learning the thing. So then like the music teacher would be like, oh, hey, can you like take it up from, you know, bar 56? And I'm like, bar 56, where is that? Because I'd already learned the song, but I didn't know where that was in the song.
Yeah.
I could never just get a firm grasp on like reading and playing at the same time. It was one or the other. So I'd have to learn it and then perform it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, everybody's different with the way that they learn things too. And with the advent of tab, as we were talking about, that is so prominent now for
people
when they're going online in particular to look for a song, Radiohead or AC/DC, there's tabs. But again, you have to be so careful because a lot of these tabs are incorrect and, you know, you never know. Corey should be arriving.
Oh, okay. Sweet. We'll let him in when he gets here.
Says he's looking for a link.
Hmm. Oh, you want me to text you the link?
Let's see here.
Yeah, just send him the link that you got because it's the same one. So.
Yeah, let me...
Yeah, so their new EP, Four on the Floor, December 8th. You go to BearClawsAcademyMusic.com if you want to get your kids lessons, if you want some lessons. But you also got to go there and check out this music that's coming out. Living Color vocalist Corey Glover going to be joining us in a second. This is really cool stuff, honestly. I mean, I was cracking up. I saw the Sylvester thing in the press release, and I was like, okay, so we got Corey Glover doing Sylvester. But he's also a huge David Bowie fan and, like, music fan. So it wasn't, like, that surprising at the same time.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, he also did the Bowie
the celebration celebrating David Bowie. Yeah,
right.
Which I totally want to ask him about when he gets here.
Hey, also I wanted to tell you that I know you're into gear, mm-hmm. and I use a lot of electro-harmonics stuff on I use on the Ode to Ustad, which is the instrumental. I was using a Ravish pedal, and there was a synth 9 pedal. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
No.
What it does is it makes your bass or your guitar sound like a synth, and it has all these different presets for analog. You can have something sound like a Wurlitzer, Fender Rhodes.
Yeah.
So
it's got all the different things in it.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Of course, call me. Hey, man, I just sent you the link. You got it? Okay, cool. Okay. All right, thanks, man. Yeah, he's coming. Yeah, so...
a multi-effects pedal?
It's an effects pedal.
Yeah, so it's like a multi-effects? Like, is it like a stop box?
No, these are separate boxes. Mm-hmm. So one box is a strictly all the synth stuff, whereas right. the other one does the Indian type of sounds.
Yeah, yeah. So it's got like the sitar and everything, like all that stuff in there.
Yep.
It's amazing, man. Like even if you pull up the like from Kemper's to the Neural DSP stuff, you can get any possible sound you want these days. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it is. And the fidelity is amazing.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Corey, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, man. How's it going, Jeremy?
Hey, good. Corey. What's up, man?
How you doing?
Nice to meet you.
Good.
I was just busting Joe's balls about being a music teacher. I asked him if he's ever had to tell a kid that they just suck and they have no future.
What do you do? You can't tell them that. It's like,
that's what I'm saying.
You can't. You really can't. And even if they do suck, it's at least they made an effort. And that's what it's about. Because it's not about, we're not, most kids wanting to play an instrument, some want to become like, you know, superstars at whatever it is. Other ones want just to find a place to express themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I got a lot of pent up stuff inside of me. So I want to put it in a guitar or a piano or a set of drums or, you know, I want to sing it out, you know, let them. I mean, can I curse here?
Yeah, totally.
Fuck it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm the same way. I mean, like back in the day, it's like my parents didn't want me hanging out with certain kids in the neighborhood because they were out drinking in the fields and, you know, like going to steal smokes from the gas station. But like I was into Van Halen. So I was like, well, can you buy me a guitar? And, yeah, absolutely. And I got into music, you know, but I'm Native American. So I come from I live on a reservation just outside of Montreal. And like addiction's a huge issue over here. And like you're either like, you know, drinking and like whatever from 14 years old or you got your shit together and you're going to school. So I chose the latter. Talking about that, I mean, like Native Americans, just specifically, like the influence on rock and roll from Link Wray to just like Robertson, who just passed away like recently. Mm-hmm. You know, a friend of mine was telling me, you know, he turned on MTV back in the day and he'd see White Rock Band. What was it about rock that was the genre for you guys? I mean, being a minority, the odds were kind of stacked against you, right?
No, they were to a degree. Mm-hmm. The overculture's idea of what rock looked like and sounded like was very much did not look like me, mm-hmm. By no stretch of the imagination, but the music did. The music sounded like me, and I, like you, listened to Van Halen. I also listened to Paul and Funkadelic. I also listened to the Isley Brothers, who made amazing rock records.
Yeah,
to me. I listened to, and every time I'd see a black face in a white band, I was like, who's that? Like you watch the Doobie Brothers and say, who's that dude back there playing bass? And who's that? And who's that? That we were always there and people of color have always been there. Hail was an amazing band, you know, Fanny, that's amazing bands of people of color and women and all kinds of stuff. That was always there. It was always in the. It was. It might not have been featured in most cases, but it was always there.
Right.
And I think I speak for all of us when I say that we didn't think that those were limitations. Mm-hmm. We didn't see them as limitations. We didn't see these things as a problem to overcome. what we wanted, what we thought was most important is if you heard it, you'd understand it. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause the music does the talking at the end of the day.
Absolutely. You know, you could, yeah, Pretty Face will get you, but so far, but a really good song, but a really good riff will open up every kind of door for you.
No, 1,000%. I mean, you know, look at guys from Hendrix to Chuck Berry. I mean, some of the greatest guitar players have been, you know, guys of color, and like even just like some of the greatest artists, from Motown all the way up through just the King of Pop. Come on.
I mean, but even more than that, James Jamerson.
Mm-hmm.
The soundtrack to your most people's childhood is James Jamerson playing bass.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. He may not be. You may not have seen him. You may not have heard him. Randy Jackson.
Yeah.
As a player, when he played with Journey, when he played with everybody, he plays.
That now, Moog synth that he played on Whitney Houston's How Will I Know? I mean, geez, come on.
Exactly. It's all there. It's all there. It's always there. It's never not there. If you talk to the people that were popular and you ask them what their influences were, chances are it's a person of color. Chances are it's a woman. Chances are, you know, one of my biggest influences is Billie Holiday. I love Billie Holiday. I love the emotion she can get out of anything. And that's what I strive for, is to get to wring out as much emotion out of any song that I sing as Billie Holiday could do in a note.
Yeah.
Or you talked about Michael Jackson earlier. Michael Jackson, when he was younger, did the song, and I think it's the perfect song. I'll never not say this. Who's Loving You with the Jackson 5?
Mm.
This is a 10-year-old boy. Sounds like a 40-year-old man that's heartbroken and crying into his beer. Mm-hmm. You can't buy that kind of thing. You can't invent that kind of shit.
Yeah. Even his performance on, you know, like I'll Be There and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just raw emotion.
Absolutely.
From a child, that nonetheless.
And coming out of a child. I say it was the child abuse that sort of caused all that. But that's another story.
Yeah. Well,
you ever hear of Big Country?
Of course.
Okay, so Tony Butler, who's the bass player in that band, Black, big influence on me as a kid. And the impetus for starting Zigzag was from the song, he was on the Pretenders record, Learning to Crawl, and My City Is Gone, that bass line is him. Mm. And I structured musically the groove kind of around that Pretender song and what Tony was playing.
I hear it now. Yes, I didn't hear it before. I hear it now.
Yeah, you can kind of hear the dun, 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 yep.
Yeah.
So it's very, you know, that was, you know, and another thing too, you know, here I am in the late 80s as a teenager and I'm watching MTV and I'm a Fishbone fan. I had to get on 2 a.m. to ever see one of their videos played, or 24/7 Spies. Like, I never was able to see them on the primetime hours. But when Living Color came out and when Cult came out, it was like bombastic and got a lot of rotation. And I was so happy because, you know, here was this all black band out of New York City and that was just kicking major ass and had this Zeppelin backbone with this amazing vocals and this shred guitar player. And, you know, I couldn't get enough. And I was so in my heart, I was just so happy to see this.
And was hoping. We were hoping that the door would then swing open for other bands, actually. And we were hoping that, you know, bands like Spies or Fishbone or PBR Street Gang or a bunch of other bands around the world would get the same kind of energy. There's a band out of Canada called The Joneses. I love them. And, you know, we'd hope that they would all get a shine. From that, you know, like it wasn't for us, it was for everybody else that came after us, and it took a while, but you know,
yeah,
it happened.
Do you think Nirvana and hip hop kind of ruined the kind of, I guess, like the I was gonna say, like, not like the projection, but like sort of like the launch for a lot of rock bands in the like the early 90s? Because, like, you know, everybody was so anti wanting to be rock star, and then the hip hop guys came in and said, okay, well, you don't want to be rock stars, fuck you, we'll be the rock stars, and then rock sort of never recovered from that.
Yeah, the evolution of music in general didn't ruin anything. It just changed it. It transmogrified. And, you know, the idea of that hip hop is a continuum of other things, which it really is. Mm-hmm. It didn't, I don't think it ruined it. I think that there was a lot of gatekeeping going on, and these folks that were in the hip hop scene didn't give a fuck about the gate. Fuck a gate. We'll climb over it. We'll dig under it. We'll knock the gate down. And that's what they did. And that, if that's not rock and roll, I don't know what is.
Right. No, I completely agree. And just the way that you said that, I mean, when people talk about hip hop artists being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like, people don't understand like how rock and roll hip hop really is.
Oh, absolutely. The early hip hop, the samples they were using was Big Beat, and they were using Zeppelin samples. They were using all kinds of stuff. They may not have had a guitar. They may not have had, you know, the drums, but they had a drum machine and they had a sampler, and they could approximate and make that same kind of sound. It's not any different. It's just like I said, it's just a continuation of what's coming next. And who knows what's going to happen after hip hop? Who knows what's going to happen after, you know, we've got so many permutations of it. We got the, you know, mumble rap and all this other stuff that's coming out of hip hop right now. And some of it is going back to, you know, the basics, back to the roots of rock and roll in the so-called hip hop idiom. But to me, it's all the same. It's all the same.
Bearclaw and the Balance Brigade, brand new EP, Four on the Floor, is coming on December 8th. You can pre-order it now and get it available wherever you get your music. BearclawAcademyMusic.com for all the deets. Corey, of course, you're a big fan of David Bowie. Did the Celebrating David Bowie. What was it about him that you just fell in love with?
He embraced it all. You know, people like Luther Vandross really got their start. And, you know, there's a story that David Bowie is on Soul Train, of all places. Mm-hmm. And Don Cornelius is asking him questions. And in the middle of the interview, he says, you know, I just want you to know, that guy over there who's singing background, that's Luther Vandross. He's going to be a major superstar. Mm-hmm. Bowie did that for him. Mm-hmm. You know, the kind of people that played on his records.
Stevie Ray Vaughan, what happened to him? He blew up.
Stevie Ray, you know, and his bands were all these monster players. Carlos Alomar, all these players that came out of that.
Tony Thompson, Omar Hakim,
you know, Sterling, all those folks that he had an eye for talent, plain and simple, and understood within the context of all this stuff that he's only as good as the people around him, and the best players he could find were everywhere, all around the world. And he found them and brought them on, and only made his music better. But in the early days, he found the best people in his neighborhood, you know,
right.
When he got bigger, he found more people outside of his neighborhood and the music got more interesting. And, you know, he moved to Berlin just to embrace himself into that scene, the music scene that was happening in Berlin. He would move to these places to absorb what was happening and as a conduit created out of that.
Mm-hmm. And talk about somebody that doesn't give a fuck. I mean, look at how many times he reinvented himself. I mean, constantly, constantly changing it up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just love that. He, you know, like,
he was a chameleon.
That, yeah.
He was. He really was. You know, and you'd be hard pressed to find any genre of music at the time when he was doing it that he didn't make himself a part of. I mean, his Earthling was a drum and bass record.
Yeah.
You know, he got into that whole thing and made amazing music out of that. He had a musical theater phase. He had all kinds of phases because he became a part of whatever that musical scene was.
Right.
He had an album called Outside that came out in around 95 that explored improvisation and these long artsy tunes that would go beyond 8 minutes. The album right. didn't really do well, but to me, oh my gosh, it was.
That's him playing saxophone. That's him playing saxophone on that whole record.
So right,
like, and he's yeah. blowing in some yeah. cases. In some cases, he's like, oh, stop. But there's some parts of that record that where he's like, wow, you got into some Ornette shit right there. Wow. Yeah.
Totally, totally. So true. I saw him on that tour, and Nine Inch Nails opened up, and he and Trent plays sax as well. They both right, right. were doing duets. Right. They were trading licks off of each other. It's amazing.
That's insane.
Don't see that often.
No, you don't see that at all. I almost feel like music has just gotten too competitive. It's like, you know, even people are afraid to like cross promote, like you're like cross promo people on social media and stuff. It's like, no, I can't do that. Especially, right. I'll give you an example in radio. Oh my God, forbid I get like a photo taken of me and like somebody from across the street at a bar together or something. Program director, they're like, why were you with so and so from Show 97.7? You can't be in photos with your competition. And I'm like, it's so like close, small minded.
Catty.
You're doing a service for people. You're not. What you're doing is bringing emotion to people. Just the masses. Who cares if your so-called competition is doing the same thing? You're all both doing the same job.
Yeah, you're trying to put smiles on faces.
Basically.
Yeah. I know there's going to be a lot of smiles on faces when you go over to do some shows with Extreme. Talk about a freaking amazing band.
Yeah, we're having a blast with them, actually.
Yeah.
We're having the best time right now playing with Extreme. You know, Nuno is really, really nice. All of them, Pat, Kev, all of them are really, really good people, you know, really down to earth people and relatable, just as human being to human being. So when us going on stage, it's not about, well, we're going to cut some heads and make sure that we leave a hole in the stage so that they can't get crawl out of. It's like, no, we're going to do what we are enhancing what's coming next. And it's been so much fun. Yeah. So much.
And we talked about this after the Boston show, Corey, that it's almost as though Living Color is having the third wave. You know,
I would hope so.
Expose all these bigger venues and bigger audiences again.
Yeah, I would hope so. I would hope people are amenable to listening to all the other stuff that they might have missed and not just that one song, you know, in the show, you know, sometimes, we would open with Rock and Roll, Led Zeppelin's Rock and Roll. Mm-hmm. And just to give you an idea of the length and breadth of what you're about to experience, that it will go from really rootsy kind of things to something really out there and experimental, which is in both bands, which I love.
Yeah. It's funny you said that, you know, fans in like that one song. I mean, Cult of Personality, is that like a blessing in disguise or is sort of like annoying at this point?
I can't complain. It's keeping me keeping the lights on right now.
You know? Right.
Yeah. So what am I going to complain about? It's something that I've benefited from the labor of my work. I've benefited from it. I can't denigrate it. You know, yeah, you want to hear that song. You're going to hear that song. It's not like you're never going to hear that song. Mm-hmm. Hell, you can turn on television right now and watch a commercial with it on. You could, you know, play a video game and it's there. You can, you know, go to YouTube. There's people trying to figure out how it works.
I mean, it's CM Punk's entrance theme.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, right. It's not completely ubiquitous, but it is ever present. And what do I have to complain about? You know, this is something I did 30 years ago.
Yeah. It's almost like you made a statement in pop culture. I mean, like everybody knows that song. I mean, artists work their whole careers to have something like that. You can't complain about it.
Why should I? Doesn't make any sense.
It's like going to see Def Leppard and they don't play Pour Some Sugar on Me. I mean, you're going to leave upset.
Yeah. I was, saw something and there's an artist that wouldn't play one of their bigger songs because it has references to guns to it, but it's her biggest song and she wouldn't do it. And it's like, I don't know if that's a good idea, but you know, do you.
I guess in the political climate, like people are afraid of getting canceled from anything. So if, I'm not even surprised by that story.
Yeah.
So look, Bear Claw and the Balance Brigade, new EP, Four on the Floor. This is really exciting. December 18th. I know Joe is super excited about having you on board with the project. I mean, why did you want to get involved with the project? Why did you say, yeah?
It was an easy drive. No, I like the songs. I was very, you know, Joe and Jamie are amazing, amazing producers and songwriters. And I really wanted to be on board with that kind of thing. And it's so much, it was so much fun to do. And it's right on 84 and I can take, it takes me about an hour to get there. So it was fine.
Yeah. Yeah. We, as I was saying earlier, we recorded mostly virtual. There was the vocal for Zigzag we did in Jamie's garage. That was the only thing that was done with us all together. Everything else, we were just sharing files.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was saying before Corey got here, you know, the subject is Zigzag and how, having the conversation and how pertinent that is and how important it is for folks in this country to have that. And we were, you know, we were throwing ideas together about how are we going to get this, how are we going to get the lyrical content infused in this song? And you know, we had a couple sessions and we were talking about having the conversation going from here to there, obfuscation, things that are kind of unclear and not assuming things as they are, living in a bubble that needs to be bursted. And, you know, that were, those were like key elements that we were talking about that we wanted to add into the lyrics.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's trying
to, you know, when you're trying to find answers and the answers are difficult to get to, was sort of like the prevailing theme to me in that song. Like trying so desperately just to get a straight answer and never being able to get one. And it's how annoying and how frustrating that can be.
Right. Yeah. Well, look, it's coming out December 8th. People are really excited to get it. Four on the Floor. You go to BearClawsAcademyMusic.com. Also going to be getting it wherever you stream music. I'm really excited for people to hear this. It's a really fun EP.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, we're very excited. It's been an arduous 2.5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's nice that there's a light at the end of the tunnel to get out there again. And like, you know, I have a 3-year-old and I was just worrying about what's going to happen to her future. And, you know, things are on the up and up. So I'm feeling a lot better than I did back in 2020 or 21. That's for sure.
I think that's everybody.
That's everybody.
Yeah, you know what? Look, coming on the show is great and all, but you know what you got to do? You got to get Vernon Reed to do his 10,000 followers promo thing for you on X. Do you know about this? Do you know what's going on with that?
No. The guitar players that he was giving.
No. So he's been doing this thing where like he's promoting other bands, like trying to get like, okay. So he says, you know, there's this band, they're such a great band, but they don't have 10,000 followers. Can we get them to 10,000 followers? So he's getting tons of press. Like he's gotten into Rolling Stone and like, it's a good initiative and stuff. But some of the bands that he's promoting, like their pages, like they don't even post content. Like Mitch and I, we got into like a bit of an argument with him on X this morning because he was promoting like King's X or something. He's, you know, Doug Pinnick is a great player and this and that. We're like, yeah, but the King's X page, they don't post anything. So why am I going to follow them?
Oh, also, I think King Crimson as well. Wasn't he pushing?
Yeah, there's a lot of them, but you know, so I don't know. And it's weird because like me not following you doesn't mean I'm not a fan of the band. But if there's no content, like why am I going to follow you? Like Van Halen's my favorite band of all time, but their Twitter account doesn't post anything. So why am I going to follow them?
Hmm. Yeah, falls to the wayside.
Content is king.
Yeah, it is.
It's true. But, you know, in order for you to come and the content to be, if they know that there's somebody there wanting to hear some content, it's which came first, the chicken or the egg? Is it the content or the people? So if there's somebody on your page, there are much more people on your page than before, and you take a notice to that and you go, oh, it changes the algorithm, actually. Mm-hmm. It changes. And as a as whoever runs that Twitter account, then it has the impetus to put content in it, because now we have all these people here. What are we going to give them? So okay, we'll throw in some old live recordings or video of Van Halen in someplace anywhere, and yeah. just to satisfy that. And it's a cyclical sort of thing. It's like telling content creators and telling people who just, you know, for lack of a better word, buy these domains, like, shit or get off the pot, you know? There are people here who want to hear from you. There are people here who want to see what you have to say about any whatever it is that you do. So they're here now. What are you going to do? It puts the onus on the person who owns and runs those Twitter accounts now.
Right. Yeah. And I stopped following bands that like just post ads, you know, like even Paul Stanley, you know, he'll put up, you know, Kiss deal on t-shirts this week, but then he'll also post like a behind the scenes selfie and like him making pizza. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I like that. You know?
Right.
Behind the scenes, insight to life on the road, at home, like, you know, humanize your account.
You know, Brand is this thing about, has had this thing, like every time we travel, TSA tears up his gig bag. Like they take it apart and don't know how to put it back together.
Oh.
So oftentimes you check his Twitter feed and you'll see how airport security mangles his pedal board. Mangles. I mean, because it's filled with wires and boxes and all kinds of stuff, and they have no idea how he got it in there in the first place, and they don't know how to put it back the way they found it at all. You know, there should be some dispensation that says this is Vernon Reed's pedal board. Touch it at your own risk. You know, there should be something across the country for people who get a hold of Vernon's pedal board.
It's true. You see that all the time, though. They take people's bags apart and then they're like, okay, here you go. Like, well, you just unpacked everything in here. Like, right. Why do I have to pack it back now?
Exactly.
You know, John Patitucci, the upright player, had this Czech upright that was from mid-19th century that the neck was broken because of whoever the airline was when they were stowing it underneath, just tossed it and he got to the gig, snapped neck.
Yeah. You see that all the time. You see them just tossing shit down there. Fragile sticker. Fuck you. I'm going to throw it even harder.
Right. They don't pay no mind to that.
Yeah.
It's okay. There are lawyers waiting for those opportunities.
That's right. Yeah,
for That's sure. True. Well, look, Bear Claw and the Balance Brigade, new EP, Four on the Floor, is coming out December 8th. Go and pre-order it. This is going to be absolutely fantastic stuff. You got Corey on here. You got Joe playing. You got some great special guests, too. It's great. And, you know, get physical copies. Good stocking stuffers.
That's for absolutely. Sure. That's for sure.
Corey, are you still moving a lot of physical media or is it all just streams these days for your band?
I think mostly streams. And it depends on where we are. You know, I think what's been happening is when we leave a town, streams go up, you know, because they saw us live or they heard us on the radio or they saw something on social media. And then they go to Spotify. They go to Apple Music. And they go, oh, yeah, I remember that. Oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, again, even though if you walk through the door because of Cult of Personality, you'll discover Type. You'll discover Open Letter to a Landlord. You'll discover Preaching Blues. You'll discover Who Shot You, which is an incredible piece, I believe, of something we've done lately. And whatever gets you through the door, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. As long as you got butts in seats at the show.
Absolutely.
Or standing room only.
Yes, right.
I love that. Well, it was so great to catch up with you guys and best of luck with this project. This is going to be great. And I just can't wait for people to hear it. It's just a lot of fun. That's how I describe it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah,
thank you.
Really appreciate the help and the push.
The Jeremy White Show.
Get exclusive interviews and bonus content on demand now. Visit youtube.com/Jeremy White Show.